For those that don't know us, we're Rick and Elizabeth Arnold. And we thought maybe in this hour we'll take a little bit sharing about us and where we come from and how we got maybe to the mission field and some things like that, because in the next hour we'll be sharing a lot more about the ministry and what God is doing. So just to give you a little background, my parents were missionaries in the country of Ivory Coast, West Africa. So I was born and raised in Ivory Coast, and went to a boarding school there, a missionary boarding school, most of my life. And it really wasn't until my senior year, after I graduated, I decided I was tired of school, so I didn't really want to go straight to college. And I wanted to stay out a year and just work with my dad doing village evangelism. And so he put me on a team that was coming out. It was a college team. And they were coming out to do 6 weeks. And so he said, I want you to take this team and go do village evangelism. And you take this team with you. Well, this team didn't know any French. All they had was, you know, they could sing and they could give their testimonies. And back in those days, we had these big Billy Graham movies that were, you know, movies of the deep sea and all the fish and things like that, where most of these places had never seen an ocean or even seen fish like that. They've never even seen a movie because they didn't even have electricity back in those days. So I would take this team and we would go target these villages that no missionaries had ever been. And as you would go into a village like this, they would be like staring at you. Who are you? Because they've never seen probably a white person ever come into their village. And you'd have to go get permission from the chief to even do anything. And when you tell them you want to show a movie in their language, they're like, wow, yes, please, you know, do what you got to do. And so we would set up this big thing, and we would do some singing first, and they would give their testimonies, and I would translate it into the local language. And then we put on the big Billy Graham movie, which was dubbed in their language also. And then at the end, we would share that, you know, if they wanted to become Christians, what they would have to do. Well, most of them are pretty unsure because it's their first time to ever hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so then we would pack up and we'd put everything back in the vehicle and we'd have to start driving out because we would go to the next village. But these people would not want you to go. They would hold on to your vehicle for the next 2 miles down the road. They ran beside you because they knew probably they would never hear again. They would never hear from you. And so it was at that time that God was really working in my heart to go and preach the gospel to an area where no missionaries had ever been. And so he had started that process in my life. And as I went to Bible college, that was where I was gearing up to, was to eventually be a missionary, but go to an area where no missionaries had been. And so that's where God has sent us. So I'll let my wife share a little bit about her story.
I grew up also on the mission field. My mom and dad were missionaries in Niger. I was born in Nigeria, and I went to boarding school in Nigeria, but they were missionaries in Niger. When I was 5 years old, we had come back to the States for our year there. We were in a church, and I was sitting with another couple other than my parents, and they started to do communion, the Lord's Supper. I'd never seen that before. And so the couple leaned over to me and said, are you allowed to, you know, participate? I didn't know. So I looked back at my mom and dad, and they said no, like that. And so I told the couple yes, because I wanted to be a part of what they were doing. That night when I got home, my mom shared that, you know, it's the Lord's Supper and that I'm invited to it if I belong in his family. And so, of course, at 5 years old, I wanted to be a part of God's family and committed my life to him. It's pretty young, but throughout my entire life, God has been working and being confident of him who began a good work in me. He's continued that good work in me. I went to Bible college, and at that time, I went believing that I would go overseas because here in the States, it felt like if somebody wanted to know about Jesus, they could. They could find a church pretty easily. They could find a study pretty easily. They could hear it on the television. They could read a book. They could hear it on the radio. There were lots of ways to hear it, and there were lots of translations or paraphrases of the Bible in English. So many of those. But because I had grown up in Niger, I had seen hundreds and hundreds of miles of people and people and people who had never heard of Jesus, who didn't have a missionary, who didn't have a Bible, nothing. And so just by facts alone, not by anything that God had done in my heart or anything, by facts alone, I was committed to go overseas to tell people about Jesus. In my sophomore year, alumnus of Columbia Bible College was martyred down in South America in Colombia. His name was Chet Bitterman. And because he had graduated from Columbia, they had his memorial service there. They did the whole service, and at the end of the service, President McQuilkin said, we have had somebody who has fallen in battle on the front lines of missionary work. Who here is willing to fill in his place on the front lines? And then it was at that time that I felt new, was confident of, was certain of, an assurance that God was calling me to go and do that. So I had the facts in my head, and then God called me to do that. I didn't know what the front lines might mean. There's different hardships in different mission fields. I just knew that it had to be frontline missionary work. Then I got married. We met each other in graduate school, got married, and together believed that God was calling us to the mission field, and we started looking into some different books about unreached people group in West Africa. Since we had both come from West Africa, we felt that God would use that, since we already had some knowledge of the culture there. So we started looking through books. We wanted a big people group. We wanted a whole lifetime goal work to do. And we wanted a people group that didn't have any missionaries, didn't have any Bible translated in their language, nothing. And so we started praying about it, and God brought the Soninke people. There's 2.5 million of them. We thought, okay, that's probably good enough for a lifetime. And so we asked, they're in Senegal, Mali, and the Islamic Republic of Mauritania. The Islamic Republic of Mauritania is governed by Islamic law. So it is against the law to be a missionary there. You can get in through maybe business or humanitarian aid or things like that, but you can't go in directly as a missionary. So we wrote to Mali, and they have a kind of umbrella organization for missionaries, and asked them if we could come and be a part of the mission team there. At that time, it's a little hard to explain, at that time in history, so this is 28 years ago and before, mission boards usually kind of carved out a country and said, okay, this is the Presbyterians, this is the Baptists, this is the, you know, that, and we don't want anybody in our part, because if we have a success, we want to be able to say that that came for us. So when we wrote and we said we're with a new mission board and we're coming in, they were like, nope, we don't want anybody, please don't come, we don't want you. So we were like, okay, Lord, let's try Senegal. So Senegal, we wrote to the umbrella organization of it and asked them if we could come and minister among the Soninke. They said, absolutely, we would love to have you, please come. They were so welcoming, and we took that as God confirming that. After we got to Senegal, we found out that where we were going, nobody wanted to go. It was the worst possible place, so it was very easy to say come and go to that faraway place. But God used it, and it was exactly where we were planning to go.
So this place that we are ministering, it's about a 15-hour drive across the Sahara Desert to get to where we, our little village. And we have been there now for 28 years, ministering to the Soninke, trying to do church planting. I mean, that was our calling, to do church planting among the Soninke. But it has taken 28 years. Just to give you a little idea, the first 10 years of us just existing in the village, we're trying to build friendships and bridges where we could just be invited into people's home. But people were a little skittish of us. They didn't know really why we were there. First of all, they thought we were bringing jobs, so they were lining up at our door. And then when we had to give the news that we didn't really have any work, they were kind of, well, why are you here then? You know? And so we had to earn their friendship. We had to earn the right to be heard. And so we would, you know, I brought over a lot of tools, and one of my things was is to help the people. You know, when their houses are falling down during the rainy season, I could help them rebuild and things like that. I was also involved in soccer. Soccer was a passion of mine. So I got involved in the sports program, playing soccer on different teams. And little by little, we were building bridges and building friendships. And after about 12 years of being in the village, a group of men came to me and said, you know, hey, we've been watching you and we feel that you are a man of God and we would like to hear the stories of the Bible. And so that was after 12 years of existing. And then even though they had invited me to share the stories of the Bible, I had to get permission to do that. So that took another three-year process to get permission from the elders of the village that I could do the Bible storing. And once they okayed that, then I was able to start doing Bible storing. And when I started to do it with this group of men, little by little, word would get out. I'd be in town walking around, going to the market or something to buy something, and the guy would come up to me and say, hey, I hear you're teaching stories in this guy's house. Will you come to mine? I want to hear them too. And so little by little, doors started opening up, and I was doing six or seven different Bible storing groups in different homes and sharing about Jesus. And it really wasn't until our 21st year, so you can imagine, 21 years of living, ministering in this little village, did we have our first convert. And his name was Vijay. And Vijay's story is quite fascinating. We have a few minutes. I'll try to tell it quickly. But he would be one of the guys that was in that first Bible storing group with me. And then one day, he goes down to the river to take his bath like he always does. And I guess when he was down there, something happened. And I'll tell you, I'll feed you along as I go. I don't want to give you something happened. And anyway, that night, about 10 o'clock at night, I was leaving my house to go do a Bible storing at someone else's home. And as I was leaving, I heard all this mourning and crying in the streets, and people were yelling and sadness. And I said, what's going on? And I said, well, Vijay drowned. And I said, wow, I can't imagine. Vijay was a big, very strong, very good swimmer. He could swim all the way across the river and back. And I knew that, you know, for him to drown, it would take something really incredible. And so I went on and did my Bible storing. And then on the way back, about midnight, I got back to my home. And I noticed that there was no more mourning going on in the street. And I asked, what went on? I said, well, Vijay showed up, but he couldn't hear and he couldn't see.
Speak.
And so I said, You know, I said, that sounds like the enemy attacking Vijay, but I couldn't go to his house that night, so I waited till morning. And then Elizabeth got a prayer letter out to all our prayer warriors to be praying for Vijay. And then in the morning, very early, I went over to his home, and he had all these people lined up in his home. So you had, in their culture, you got to stop and greet everybody, ask them about their family, their daughters, their goats, their sheep, their farm. Finally, I make it to Vijay, and I sit down in front of Vijay, and I said, man, I really want to hear your story, but I know there's a lot of people here. So when you have time, could you come and share your story? And by the way, how did you get your hearing back? Because he could hear and he could speak. He goes, well, early this morning at some time, my hearing came and I was able to speak. And so we were trying to think, okay, the prayer letter that she got out got to our prayer warriors. The prayer warriors started praying. Maybe it was pretty close to morning by that time. So that could be how God had worked. And anyway, so I asked him, I said, I want you to come and share when you are ready. About 3 hours later, he comes to my home and he tells me his story. He said, I had gone down to the river to take my bath like I normally do. I had taken off my clothes. I started walking into the river, and I was walking in. This spirit of the river comes out in a form of a woman and puts out her hand towards him and says, come with me. And he was very scared to put his hand out to her, but she insisted and grabbed his hand and started to pull him into the river. And he said he fought with all his might to get loose, and when he got loose, he just ran for the hills. He didn't pick up his clothes or anything. He just ran for the hill. And he says as he was running, this real warm wind came around him, and his speech went and his hearing went. And he just went up there and he hid. And he hid up there until it was dark because he didn't have any clothes. All his clothes were down at the river. And that's the people who found his clothes but didn't find him, so they just thought he had drowned. And when it was dark enough, he saw a little moped go by and he motioned to the guy that he needed some clothes. And so the guy went and got some clothes for him. And then the guy put him on his scooter and took him to his home. And as he walked into his home, everybody is mourning and crying. And then in walks Vijay into his home. And they're amazed. They're astounded. Where have you been? They're asking him all these questions, but this is at the time he couldn't hear and he couldn't speak. So his brothers grabbed him and brought him in and made him sit down. And he said he just sat there with all these people that were crying and asking him questions, but he couldn't hear. And he goes, within 5 minutes, this lady walks in again, this evil spirit from the river walks in. He goes, no one else sees her, but he sees her plain as day. And she walks right up to him, grabs his hand, and starts to pull him, walk him out of his courtyard. Well, his brothers grab him and say, you know, you're staying here. And so I looked at VJ and I said, you know, all those stories that I've been telling you about Jesus, he goes, the Jesus that I've been telling you about, these demons, these evil spirits, live in fear of Jesus. I said, are you afraid? He goes, you won't even understand it. He goes, in the night, we don't even sleep in our home. We hear the evil spirits. They make noises in our house at night. My kids scream and cry at night. We don't sleep at night. I said, but the Jesus that I've been telling you about, if you just mentioned his name, these evil spirits would flee. They live in that much fear. And he looked at me and he goes, you know, I've been listening to you for a long time, and I've been listening to the stories of the Bible, and I know that that Jesus you're talking about is the real God. And I'm here today because I want to accept him as my Savior. And so he got down on his knees, and he accepted Christ into his heart. And then that night, we went over, and we prayed over his house, and we prayed over his kids and things. He goes, from that day forward, he goes, his kids have never been awoken by the demons. But his family did not want him to ever go down to the river to take a bath anymore. And I said, well, I think you could go down to the river and take a bath, but I'm going to suggest one thing. When you go down, you just sing over and over, Jesus, 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 Jesus. Just sing it over and over and over. And I guarantee you, if the demons are there, they will flee because they do not like the name of Jesus being sung over and over. And so to this day, he goes to the river, he sings that over and over when he goes to take his bath, and he says he's never been hassled again by the evil spirits. So that is VJ's story. So we have quite a few other stories that we will be adding to, because God is working. Mm-hmm. But this was the first believer after 21 years of living and ministering in Bakel. And so now we are on furlough until January of 2020, and we'll be heading back again. We just finished a five-year term, so it was a little bit long to be gone away from all our churches and supporters, but we really felt that we needed to stay there for that length of time because of what we were being involved in. But now we are back, and we'll finish the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey says, in a little bit. Thank you.